Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Match Group fourth quarter 2016 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance at any time, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Lance Barton, Senior Vice President of Investor Relations. You may begin.
Thank you, operator, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Match Group earnings call for the fourth quarter of 2016. Joining me on the call this morning is Greg Blatt, our chairman and CEO, and Gary Swidler, our CFO. They're both going to review the Q4 investor presentation that we have posted to the IR section of our website, and then we will open it up for questions. But before we start, I'd like to remind you that during this call, we may discuss our outlook and future performance. These forward-looking statements typically may be preceded by words such as we expect, we believe, we anticipate, or similar statements. These statements are subject to risk and uncertainties, and our actual results could differ materially from the views expressed today. Some of these risks have been set forth in our earnings release and our periodic reports filed with the SEC. With that behind us, I'll now turn the call over to Greg.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Glad to have you with us. Q4, another solid quarter for us. Just going ahead to slide four. PMC perspective, pretty much exactly what we thought. Stronger international, continued driven by Tinder, Pairs in Japan, MeetTik, et cetera. A little softer in North America, again, given what we talked about last quarter, which is the beginning of the effects of our controlled PMC runoff at Affinity. Which again, we talked about would have an effect sort of throughout this part of the year. And a reminder that gloriously, this will be our last quarter talking about pro forma for POF, as that will anniversary, and we'll never have to look at that again. Moving to slide five, Tinder subscriber growth continues to be great. Really, you think about it, from zero to almost 1.8 million subscribers in under 2 years on a global basis, really is phenomenal. No signs of relenting here. See us moving up the app chart in terms of gross revenue. Really just continues to be a phenomenal success story and going very well. Focusing a little deeper on Tinder at the product side, we've really been cranking here. Again, we've scaled up dramatically in 16 in terms of resources. Over the last few months, we've really been focused on three principal projects. One is the web application and the alternative sign up to Facebook, which we talked about last quarter. We expect those to launch, both of them, in Q2. We think they are real opportunity to expand the top of the funnel and give access to users who currently are not, for a variety of reasons, using Tinder. Additionally, and this was a little unexpected, we sort of paused in Q4 and decided to really tackle some tech debt. And we devoted a huge number of our resources to doing so. We're just hitting such a scale, not unlike sort of, and there aren't that many startups that have gone from zero to where we are as quickly as we have, but usually startups have to rewrite their code when they start hitting scale. We hit it very quickly. We were starting to hit crash rates. We were starting to see, especially on Android, some retention issues because the app wasn't loading, just real basic performance stuff. We've already reduced crash rates by 90%, starting to see retention tick back up in those areas, and really, you know, amazing that we're having the success we're having, even with what has been a pretty clunky machine. And as we roll that off over the next few weeks, both on Android and iOS, really sets the stage for what we expect to be a very vigorous 2017 product roadmap. Looking at that part, again, plan on doubling tech resources this year as well. We've got major updates planned really across the board, profile, discovery, communication, monetization. I think Tinder a year from now will certainly seem very different than it has in a number of exciting ways. So very robust idea map and the resources behind it to bring it to fruition. Knowing the space that we do, there's no one else out there who's going to bring this much resources to this battle, sort of bringing guns to a knife fight. We are going to continue to iterate on product, drive innovation and breadth, and really excited about it. We signed a deal with Facebook to provide us with excess ad inventory. Obviously, our direct sales continue. you know, we're on track in Q1 to you know, more than triple our direct sales from Q1 last year. But as we roll in Facebook, we're going to be able to start providing inventory on top of that. Should be integrated in Q2 of 17 and launched at that point as well. And, you know, another important step in what I will call our non-urgent drive to build this advertising business. It has sort of taken second place to the direct business with, I think, good reason. But we are slowly and steadily building it, and we think it has real opportunity to contribute down the road. Moving to slide 7, we talked last quarter a bit about the fact that we were looking to make some discretionary investments into momentum in Tinder, particularly rest of world. You know, I think sometimes we forget how early Tinder really is in its life cycle here. And, you know, up until through last year, we'd spent very little on international, really anything. And in Q4, we started playing with throwing some money into countries like Brazil, India, Turkey, et cetera, in what I'll call non-traditional marketing ways, and seeing real lift. It's not traditional marketing like you're buying this rag and you expect that rag to convert into this sub and you have this ROI. It's more about trying to actually move up baseline, create real viral growth. And we've seen some real success with that at very low spend numbers. Q1 of this year, we're scaling that dramatically. We're going to learn a lot. I don't think we're looking at this like Match, where, you know, we want to be as precise as we can on our ROI. I don't think that makes sense at Tinder right now. At the same time, you know, we're going to look at it pretty closely and make sure that it at least seems to be making sense. It'll take us a while to develop a fully fledged measurement system. We'll be moving dollars from this channel to that channel. And we may end up toggling it back a lot if it doesn't hold. But if it does, we think it will pay real dividends, not in 17, but in 18, 19, as we really entrench ourselves in some of these markets. I mean, we had a day last month where Brazil actually exceeded the U.S. in registrations. I mean, that's incredible. We're creating real momentum in some markets that, while lower monetizing than Western markets, have huge populations and do monetize at a reasonably strong rate. So we think it's a really good investment if we can make it work. And, you know, as Gary will talk about, that's putting some margin compression on this year. We'll know a lot more after Q1 about, you know, how much that's going to be as the year goes through. But right now we're committed to doing this and to learning about it. Switching to slide 8, nothing you don't know, but I thought it was helpful to talk about 17 in the context of 16 for our non-Tinder brands. 16 was, as we said repeatedly, really about bringing ourselves into mobile alignment, mobile parity, if you will. You know, we did work on native apps, we did work on our underlying technology, we did work on mobile web across the board. And as you can see here, just a few examples of some of the gains that we got in doing so. And that was really the agenda for 16, and we talked a lot about driving up conversion, which, you know, we've continued to do, and that's only one of many measurements, obviously, but one that we've talked about. So we feel like we've done a really good job on that piece of it. If you go to slide 9 in 2017, the plan here has been now about starting to widen the top of the funnel. I think as we look at what's happened over this 2 or 3 year push to bring, you know, Match, Plenty of Fish, OkCupid, MeTic into a mobile world, I think one of the things that's happened is the products have somewhat lost their differentiation. And, you know, you're focused on making the user interface work in the mobile platform. You're focused on messaging, you're focused on all these things. But, you know, prior, these four brands had, you know, 10 plus years to develop their own personalities. I think some of that has been lost. I think in this world, you need to have a differentiated concept in order to thrive. And so one of our real focuses this year is recreating that differentiation product to product, putting our marketing behind that differentiation. And that's really our strategy to growing the top of the funnel. Slide 9 shows just a couple of examples. On Match, we just launched something called Missed Connections. Huge response for the people who are adopting it. We're also renewing our focus on events. Events have continued, but they haven't really been a focus of our marketing the way they have at Meetic, for instance. And, you know, Match, the whole theory of Match now is that it's becoming more like meeting in the real world. You've got these location-based features. You've got events. We've got two or three more big product releases over the course of the year, and we're going to organize our marketing efforts around those to really drive growth in this area. OkCupid, another example. OkCupid has always had an audience that's a little more educated than the rest of our businesses, a little more eclectic. And yet, if you look at the profile on the left here on this slide, you'll see that all of that was lost in the mobile experience. You know, the old desktop profile would have lots of information about somebody. The OkCupid profile became effectively one photo. We moved it to the right where we added more photos. We added the questions and answer scores back in that made OkCupid so unique. We added a bunch of information, as you can see from the stats above, just on focusing on the individuality of our membership. We've really driven some really great returns on that in terms of user behavior. So this is just a sampling of the strategy for 17. It's differentiation of these businesses and putting our marketing and PR effort behind it. And we think that's what's going to drive drive the increasing top of the funnel throughout 17. And before I turn it over to Gary, I just wanted to hit on, obviously, what's some big news of the release, which is our impending sale of Prince & Review. Prince & Review is a business that I personally championed buying a few years ago. I think it's a great business. The theory we had at the time was that sort of the consumer internet side of it would predominate, and that we had great expertise in that. I think that that will prove to be the case. I think that the stickiness of the existing offline business surprised us a bit. I think that as a result, the dissimilarities versus the similarity balance was off versus what we thought. We continue to believe that it's going to reach its destiny as a primarily digital one-stop business. We believe in it, but I think from a focus perspective, given what we think would be an increased timeline, we thought it made more sense to move that into the hands of an education player and for us to focus a little closer to home. So we're glad we got that sale done. We got it at a price we feel good about, and I think we're expecting it to close sometime in the first half of the year, but we're really focused on dating going forward. Gary?
Okay, great. Thanks, Greg. And, you know, to that point, the financial information that we present here in the slides, starting on slide 11, relate only to our dating business. We expect to take a hard look at the end of the first quarter whether Prince & Review should be considered a discontinued operation. But regardless of that, we're focused on the dating business, and we're talking about our business now as the dating business only. So I just want to make sure that that's clear to everyone as we flip through the financial slides. If you go to slide 11, for the fourth quarter, we reported dating revenue of $295 million. If you exclude the impact that FX had on the quarter's revenue, given the appreciation of the U.S. dollar since the U.S. presidential election, we would have had $297 million of revenue, or 23% year-over-year growth. Pro forma for POF, this was our seventh straight quarter of double-digit revenue growth on a year-over-year basis. Our revenue pro forma for POF grew 14%, as you can see on the bottom slide 11, and operating income grew 33%. We also improved our EBITDA margin on a year-over-year basis again in Q4, as we've done every quarter in 2016, primarily due to the leverage we're getting from our lower marketing spend brands. One other thing I just wanted to point out in our Q4 results, we had a $6.5 million fair value adjustment in the quarter related to an earnout on one of our smaller acquisitions. The earnouts can be quite sensitive to small changes in our forecasts for the business. The adjustment does not relate to a Plenty of Fish acquisition, which does not have an earnout. And I just point out that these adjustments tend to be volatile quarter to quarter, moving up and down. So you shouldn't read too much into those kinds of adjustments. If you flip over to slide 12, just looking back on the entire year of 2016, both as we reported it and on a pro forma basis for POF, we're very proud of the results that we put up in 2016, as Greg has said, delivering on what we said at the time of our IPO. Dating revenue exceeded $1 billion for the first time, and it grew 15% year over year pro forma for the POF acquisition. And in fact, we're north of 15% growth on all of our key metrics for the year. Revenue, operating income, EBITDA, PMC. when we factor in the POP acquisition. And then we achieved 36% operating margin, adjusted EBITDA margins for the year, which is very strong growth on the margin performance. If you flip to slide 13, this slide we've shown consistently, it shows our ARPU, and you can see now that we've lapped the one-year anniversary of the POP acquisition, ARPU has been steady throughout 2016. You can see that prior quarters had appeared down on a year-over-year basis, largely due to the one-time impact of the POF PMC base coming into our ARPU calculation. But now that that's over, I think the numbers are much more clear. There was some Q4 pressure on international ARPU on a sequential basis from the impact of the U.S. dollar appreciation, but it is steady year-over-year, as you can see on the chart on the right. We also have made a change to our calculation of ARPU. We've had a de minimis amount historically of non-subscriber revenue in our ARPU numbers. We removed that now for our ARPU calculations, and we've adjusted the prior periods as well for comparability. We started to have boost a la carte revenue to non-subscribers in Q4. It really started in the middle of Q4. It's still a relatively small amount in Q4, but we think it'll be larger going forward. And so to improve the disclosure, we have now stripped that out of ARPU for all periods, including the Q4 period. And then I would just mention that both FX impacts, as well as this change in ARPU definition, shaved about a penny off our reported ARPU this quarter. So we would have been at 54 cents, not 53 cents in aggregate, had it not been for those impacts. If you flip over to slide 14 on the outlook for Q1 and for 2017 as a whole, it's important to emphasize, as Greg mentioned, that we believe our business has natural margin expansion. However, we're choosing to spend incrementally on Tinder marketing, particularly in the rest of the world, and this spend has essentially kept our margin expectations flat for 2017, something that we telegraphed on the last earnings call, but that spend is likely costing us 1 to 2 points of margin expansion in full year 17. On the third quarter earnings call, we also gave a very preliminary look at revenue for 2017, and we said that we thought it could grow 15 to 20%. That call took place right before, in fact, the week before the U.S. presidential election, and as I mentioned, the dollar has strengthened significantly, especially against the euro and the yen, two critical currencies for us, and that has shaved about 1.5 points off our growth rate for 2017 over 2016. And so there is significant impact from FX in our outlook that we factored in. It could be wrong. That's just the best guess based on where FX rates are now. But there has been significant movement, which we factored into our 17 guidance since the election and since our last call. It also affects, of course, our Q1 numbers as well as the other quarters through the year. Other than that, our expectations for 2017 have not changed dramatically since that call. It's important to emphasize that when we made the outlook on the third quarter call, we were in a preliminary mode. We were still going through our financial plan. I think we were quite clear about that. We have firmed it up since then, and so we've reflected all that in our guidance that's on this page. It's very much worth noting that we expect revenue momentum to build throughout 2017 as Tinder's product momentum builds and the North American businesses improve in their performance. We continue to believe that PMC will grow by more than 15% in 2017, largely driven by Tinder, POF, and the international businesses, which are the same businesses that drove growth in 2016. The North American brands will contribute to PMC as we get later in this year. At Tinder, it's also important to emphasize that revenue growth is going to be driven both by PMC growth and a la carte revenue growth, and we're focused on maximizing overall revenue at Tinder, not specifically subgrowth, and we expect to optimize pricing to maximize the total of sub revenue and a la carte revenue in 2017. I also mentioned on the earlier slide on ARPU that it's been flat for a while now, and we expect that to continue. We think it could be plus or minus a penny in 2017, excluding any sort of unforeseen additional FX impacts. At the bottom of page 14, we also provide some additional assumptions for 2017. I think it's worth pointing out that our CapEx is down about $13 million compared to where it came in 2016, and our stock-based comp is up very marginally and equates to about 4% of revenue. If you flip to slide 15, we've been saying that for a while now that we're going to use our cash to delever, And at the end of Q4, we made good on that, paying down about $40 million on our Term Loan B, bringing the balance from $390 million to $350 million. We ended with net leverage of 2.3 times. We also repriced the $350 that was remaining on our Term Loan B in very late 2016, shaving off about 125 basis points off of the coupon. So when you factor in the repricing plus the debt pay down, we estimate over $6 million of savings from interest in 2017. Even with the voluntary debt payment that we made, we ended 2016 with $254 million of cash on hand. As you can see on the right side of the page, that's a number that's been building significantly since our IPO. On this slide, we've actually broken out the domestic and the international cash. Given all the discussions about potential tax reform and repatriation, we thought it would be helpful for people to see where our cash sits. We also expect in 2017 a mid-50s EBITDA to free cash flow conversion rate. This means that if you take our
mix. In terms of the revenue side, I think, there is a dependence on marketing. I mean, obviously, some of our businesses have very little dependence on marketing. Tinder, even with this sort of rest of world marketing spend surge, it's not really going to make a difference to revenue in 17. OkCupid, Plenty of Fish, those businesses are not terribly dependent on marketing. Match, Affinity, et cetera, are dependent on marketing. It is also true, as you state, that in any given period, the less marketing you – lowering your marketing is likely to help your EBITDA and not really hurt your revenue, although it hurts your revenue down the road. So our forecast is our best mix of our beliefs on a business-by-business basis about what our marketing spend is going to be across the periods. It does move around from time to time, as I think, you know, you followed us for a while, you know. Things change. Things become more expensive. They become more productive. All these things happen. This represents our best guess. I would say that, you know, Gary talked about sort of what's changed from November 1st or whenever we gave our preliminary view to now. It's that we built up business-by-business marketing plans, quarter-to-quarter, et cetera. You start looking at the logistics of when campaigns will launch, and this is where it's come out. So it could move a little bit, but no more so than usual, and we always have a range to reflect that that flexibility.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Peter Stabler of Wells Fargo Securities. Your line is now open.
Thanks very much. Good morning. A couple, if I could. Greg, could you give us a little bit more color on your comments on the affinity? Yes, we know that you mentioned that in Q3. Just wondering, given that some of these are, or most of these are hard paywall assets, you know, what's your commitment to them? Are these strategically important? Could you envision a scenario where you reduce the number of affinity brands? And then one for Gary, could you give us any more color on the PMC outlook now that we're past the pro forma issue with POF, 15%? Would you be willing to give us any sort of separation between Tinder and non-Tinder assets? Thanks so much.
Okay. On affinity, you know, the notion of whether something is strategic or not is a conversation that we've turned ourselves upside down on, you know, many times. I think it's strategic if it makes us money long term. If it doesn't make us money long term, it's not strategic. I think that you know, we have a host of brands in affinity. It doesn't cost us really an extra nickel to keep any of them incrementally on. So sort of we spend marketing against each of them, especially on the long tail of them, depending on pretty strict ROI look. So I don't think about it that way. I think when you step back and you think about the affinity situation right now and its impact on PMC, I thought it might make sense to sort of go a little bit deeper on this. You know, all PMC are not created equal. You know, for a given business, there's some PMC that walks in the door very cheap. There's some PMC you have to spend money against at a good margin, and then you sort of theoretically at least spend right up until marginal break even on a lifetime value basis. So what we saw happening at Affinity is, you know, Affinity of our hard paywall brands has always been the lowest margin on a unit basis. And we had a pretty large number of subs that we were acquiring at what I would call close to break even marginal lifetime economics, right? So assume a world where we spent a dollar to obtain a sub, and we thought that over the lifetime that we would make $1.10 off of that sub, right? So call that a 10% ROI. As we dug deeper and deeper, our math shifted, and we thought instead of getting it $1.10 for that dollar we were spending, we were probably getting closer to 95 cents, which means rather than making 10 cents, we were losing 5. And as we dug deep, that was actually a pretty big trough. So in the grand scheme of our profitability, cutting out that number didn't really make much of a difference. In fact, in the near term, it's helpful. But it's a big hit to PMC. So to give some quantification, you know, as we look ahead at our plan, the difference between sort of where we were at the high point in 16 and where we think we'll be in 17, you're talking about a runoff of almost 100,000 PMC. Now, in terms of profitability, it really doesn't mean much to us going forward. Instead of making that 10, instead of thinking we're making 10 cents or, in fact, losing 5 cents, we're just doing it as a wash. But in terms of aggregate PMC numbers, that puts pressure on this number. And that's what I talked about last quarter when I said that this sort of controlled runoff of affinity PMC is going to delay our sort of return to year-over-year growth in North American PMC. It doesn't have much economic consequence, but when you look at that number, that's going to have a drag over both in Q4 and going forward. Just as a point of quantification, I think Q1 affinity marketing spend is down more than 30% over Q1 last year. So we took that number down. That wasn't our original plan. It doesn't have that much economic consequence. This is what I would call the marginal spend on a profitability basis, but it does affect this particular metric. Gary, you want to take the...
On the PMC number, so we're saying 15% plus for the year. And, you know, what we have is a lot of confidence that we'll be able to move PMC up at least 15%, but hard to say exactly how it's going to come out for a variety of reasons. You know, Tinder clearly has the possibility to achieve that on its own, but as I said in my remarks, we're toggling between a la carte revenue and sub growth for Tinder, and we don't know yet how that's all going to play out. I wouldn't read too much into it on the Tinder side, other than we got to figure out exactly how we want to monetize Tinder in 2017 with a few more variables than we had in 2016. But we expect Tinder to contribute strongly to the PMC growth. We expect POF to continue to contribute strongly to PMC growth, international, especially Meetic and our Japanese business. So the same business that have been contributing in 16, we think will contribute. What's going to happen, as Greg just spoke about, is you won't really see PMC growth from OkCupid, from Match North America until very late in the year. So they won't contribute a lot of PMC in 17 to the PMC growth number. And then you've got this deduction, essentially, from Affinity as we reduce our spend on that business and bring it down. And so when you aggregate that all together, that's how we get to the 15% plus, and we'll obviously, you know, update people as the year goes on how that's...
Yeah, a little more color there, which is on obviously we talked about Affinity, talked about Tinder and POF. On Match and OkCupid, they're sort of on the course they've been on, meaning, you know, we talked about Match, OkCupid, and Affinity together returning to year-over-year PMC growth by the end of the first half of 17. Affinity puts a cloud on that, but Match and OkCupid are still on their track. We expect them to return collectively to year-over-year PMC growth in Q3. And that's sort of always been the case. I think, you know, you look at Match alone in the second half of 16, first-time subs, which is the leading indicator, was flat year-over-year for the first time in God knows how many quarters. I mean, it had been in steady decline for a long time. Second half of 16, flat over second half of 15. We expect improvements in net adds every quarter in Match PMC throughout 17. Same with OkCupid. OkCupid hit a low point of year-over-year FTS in Q3. It improved in Q4. We expect improvements in net adds in OkCupid every quarter in 17. So while Gary's right that in the first half of the year, OkCupid and Match don't have growth themselves, they do contribute to the overall growth number by having less of a drag on the number in 17 than it did on 16, meaning the extent to which it's down year over year will be less in the first part of 17 than it was in the first part of 16, which also helps contribute, again, turning positive in the second half of 17. So, again, I think if you go back, I know this has been a hot topic, if you go back all the way to the IPO and you just look at North American PMC, I would say Tinder's done better than we expected. Affinity, we obviously have an issue that really isn't that much of an economic issue, but certainly worse in a PMC than we expected. And Match and OkCupid are pretty much right on target. You know, OkCupid experienced a little more weakness last year than we thought, but it's also rebounding, I think, pretty nicely as we roll out this new this sort of new product, basically. And so it's all in. It's sort of where we thought it would be, with just a couple of little toggles up and down.
Very helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Douglas Anmuth of J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Thanks for taking the question. Can we just translate that conversation that we just had on PMCs into revenue a little bit more? And just thinking about the 17 guide, you were at 15 to 20% growth before and now at about 13 to 17. I know, Gary, you called out the 1.5 percentage points of impact from FX. Is it fair to think that the rest there is all in the classic brands, if you could just clarify that, or if there's something else? And then also, can you just talk about your confidence in having flat EBITDA margins given the doubling of the Tinder tech headcount, marketing investments, you know, how you see that playing out through the year? Thanks.
So, you know, as I said, There's not really it's not right to look at the change from the 15 to 20% to where we are now and think that that's really North America weakness, particularly shining through. I think that you know, as we've firmed everything up, I think we've, you know, kind of refined our guidance a little bit. Maybe there's a little bit of conservatism in it, but we don't see trends that have really changed our overall view on guidance. So we would attribute it the vast bulk of what's changed to FX. not anything fundamental in the business, certainly not anything in the North American performance in particular.
What was the other question? I'm glad that when you started to say translate the conversation, I thought you were going to say into English, and I was concerned. But
that would be helpful.
What do you think the spend at Tinder on headcount and marketing?
Look, we are expanding our marketing, and I put marketing in quotations. I know you can't see them, but just because compared to the other kinds of marketing that we do at our businesses, we are increasing it dramatically. I mean, in a business like Tinder, you wouldn't normally expect it to even increase at the rate of revenue growth. You would expect to ultimately get leverage in it, unless you think back to the fact that we're still really in the early stage of this business, and we really want to see if we can accelerate our momentum in some of these places we're going really well. But that's a big slug of it. I think even with that, and look, I don't know how much we're ultimately going to spend on it. I really don't. We had really good success at small levels of spend. We're going to increase that spend dramatically, and we're going to know a lot more by the end of this quarter. But I feel pretty confident that, we gave a range for EBITDA and a range for revenue, and obviously your margin swings a lot depending on sort of where you end up in both those ranges, but we feel pretty good about those ranges, if that makes any sense.
We've tried to lay out sort of the maximum amount of spend at Tinder on the marketing, and so, that's how we get to the flat EBITDA margins. But obviously, if we don't see it being effective or we can't spend all that effectively, we'll pull that back, and it'll change the margin characteristics for the year. But I think the flat margins incorporate a pretty heavy load of spend on the Tinder marketing. So I think we have confidence that's sort of the max that we'd spend on there.
Okay, and if I could just follow up with one. Just on a one-time basis, maybe just because we're kind of kicking off the year, is there any color you can give on total dating, MAUs, DAUs, just to help us level set around the business and the brands?
I actually don't even have the number in front of me. I think that if you X out Tinder, I think that, as we said before, last year was not so much a big top of the funnel growth year. So I think that excluding Tinder, MAUs are probably flattish to up a little bit overall. I think Tinder MAU growth has continued to be solid. It's obviously growing less than revenue and less than PMC, as you would expect, but it's growing well. Again, nice, strong double-digit growth, stronger in rest of world than in Europe and the U.S., but continuing to grow in all three sort of sectors. I think the one piece of color I just want to lay in, not because it really implicates our results as much as that it's just interesting, Q4 and even the beginning of Q1 have been a little weird. The election actually had a pretty profound impact on, I think, viewing habits. We saw a 20% decline in registrations when the election hit. And if you actually look at the map, we've actually seen increases in registrations and activity in states where Trump won, and decreases in registrations and activity in states where Trump didn't win. And that's obviously been eradicating, but it's definitely caused a little bit of a love funk in a way that we've never seen before. I mean, and again, that's dissipating, but it was just really interesting to watch. Doesn't really have any real implications for our business in any long-term sense, but it was a weirdness that we'd never seen before.
Got it. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from John Blackledge of Cowen & Company. Your line is now open.
Great. Thanks for the question. So Greg, you transitioned to CEO of Tinder in December. Could you just discuss the rationale for the move and perhaps, the biggest strategic initiatives you're thinking about for Tinder in 17 and going forward? And then secondly, just to follow up on the sub-question, with Match North America and OkCupid returning to kind of PMC growth in the back half of 17, how should we think about, longer-term core Match North America sub-growth starting in 18 and going forward? Do we get back to kind of mid-single-digit, high single-digit sub-growth in 18 and going forward? Thank you.
You're welcome. Look, I think that the Tinder move, Sean and I have been working together relatively closely for a while. I think that Tinder had clearly gotten to a point where it needed a different expertise and breadth of management. I think obviously, like any startup, we have wrestled with the right way to do that for a while. We made a change in CEOs a couple years ago. That didn't really work out. Sean sort of stepped back in the CEO role with me as sort of a chairman being there to help. I think as we evolved that, I think it became clear that we were, despite our great growth, I think we were leaving lots of opportunity on the table just through a lack of organizational expertise, discipline, et cetera, that you wouldn't expect to have in a CEO of that level of experience. We talked about bringing in a COO, we talked about bringing in a CEO, et cetera. From just a overall dynamic stage, our view was strategically things are going very well. We didn't want to bring up and do a big shakeup. That wasn't really what we were looking for. Obviously, Tinder is where a lot of our growth is. It's where I thought that I could make the biggest impact, at least in the near term. So that's what I'm doing. I think I'm the right CEO for Tinder right now. That may not always be the case. I think we are bringing a level of discipline to, especially the product side, that we haven't really had before. And I think that especially as you keep doubling resources every year, you know, you need that. I think we have an incredible idea funnel. I don't think that's at any shortage. I think the art of bringing analytics to it, of bringing discipline processes to it, is something that hopefully I can affect. I expect our productivity to increase meaningfully on the product side over the course of this year, and that's really what this business is all about at the end of the day, meaning spending money in India and Brazil and everything else is smart, I think, and good and can accelerate growth. But at the end of the day, it's about the product experience. You know, we continue to have such a leadership position globally across all the competition, and not to sort of put everything we have into it, both from a personnel perspective and a financial perspective, just doesn't make any sense. So that's what drove it. And I think things are going really well. In terms of, what was the other question, Gary?
We're going to sell long-term growth.
Yeah, I think, look, I think what we'd always said, a way to think about it is, and we haven't, I mean, you know, Gary talked about how 2 months can move your 17 plan, never mind 12 months can change our 18 outlook. So, you know, take this with a grain of salt. But the plan was always, or the outlook was always, that by second half of 17, we would start to see North American subgrowth again. As you got into 18, we'd start to approach that mid-single-digit growth rate, and that beyond, we thought we could be at that mid to high single-digit growth rate. I think it's fair to think about all that as sort of slipping 6 months. So, you know, we're now going to hit that growth in 17 in the back half instead of the front half. Maybe that means we get to, you know, 3% PMC growth in 18 instead of 5%. I don't really know. I think that it's going to increase meaningfully, and I don't think it changes any of the outlook that we've had. POF, international, again, continue to be ahead of that. So if you X out Tinder, I think that mid-single-digit PMC growth rate is probably right. You're probably still going to be a little positive, but a little bit less in North America, at least in the three brands we talked about, OkCupid, Match, and Affinity. But overall, when you take all the non-Tinder brands, I think that's probably right. And I think as the North American come into alignment, I think that's what can start to push you up into that higher single-digit range.
That's great. If I could just have one follow-up. You didn't call Tinder advertising out as a driver. You called PMC growth and a la carte. But with direct advertising revenue tripling in 1Q, just trying to figure out how you look at ad load. In 2016, was it one out of 100 swipes were an ad? And, like, kind of where is that going? Is it 1.5 or 2 out of 100 swipes in 17 will be an ad when you factor in Facebook and ramping up direct sales? Thanks.
So I think, look, it's tripling in Q1, but it's still off a relatively small number. I think what we said last quarter, I think it's still generally true, is we expect indirect revenue percentage of revenue to be somewhat consistent. Maybe we could do better, I don't know, but that's sort of what's in the plan. I think that in our current state of the direct sales business, the ad load and frequency is just not an issue. We haven't focused on it at all. I think one of the first things we're going to do when we plug in Facebook is start to test frequency, because then suddenly we can turn on as much volume as we want. And I think that by the end of Q2, I'm going to be able to answer that question with some precision. Right now, it's literally all guesswork. I mean, it's just not a relevant number right now. The inventory level is so small. But Facebook gives us the ability to really hit any ad load we want. And I think Q2, we're going to spend a fair amount of time testing that to try and find what our optimal level is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Chris Merwin of Barclays. Your line is now open.
All right, thank you. I just had a couple. You talked about the Facebook partnership for Tinder a bit, but is there an opportunity to extend that partnership to the rest of your brands? And how do you think about integrating ads more generally in a way that's additive to revenue and doesn't impact engagement? And then just secondly, on Tinder, as you start to push a la carte a bit more, do you anticipate any increase in churn if users are able to use, you know, some of these features without having to sign up for a subscription? And in that case, does it make sense to start reporting a la carte separately? Thank you.
Sure. On the Facebook question, the Facebook is an in-app advertisement product. Outside of Tinder, our app business is, again, mobile web tends to be a lot bigger, which, again, is one of the reasons we're excited about adding mobile web to our Tinder product in Q2. But I think that right now our app products don't have a lot of advertising in it. They also don't have a ton of volume. I think it's absolutely possible that Facebook could become a solution for that. But I don't think of that as a real big, certainly 17 mover. Look, the ad business overall is, you know, we're building it again, I said, in a non-urgent way. I think, you know, we haven't even, you know, we just spent in the non-Tinder businesses a year optimizing our products, our mobile products for our direct business. Now we have to start working in the advertising piece too, again, as a second priority. So I think that's sort of an 18-19 type issue. In terms of the impact of a la carte on subscription, I just go back to what Gary said, which is we're going to optimize for revenue. It is absolutely right that if you go heavier on a la carte, there will likely be some cost paid on the PMC side, whether that comes in churn or that comes in conversion or it comes whenever it will come. You'd do it if it was a net positive, and if the net positive was such that it really drove materiality in some numbers that we don't currently disclose, we'd absolutely think about making some additional disclosure. Right now, I don't think it's really necessary.
Yeah, it was a relatively small number in this quarter since, you know, we just rolled it out. But obviously, we'll look at it going forward and see if it makes sense. We'll consider disclosing it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Lloyd Walmsley of Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Thanks, guys. Couple, if I can. It sounds like you're pretty excited about the ROW opportunity for Tinder and some of the marketing experiments you've been running. Can you just kind of talk about the competitive environment in some of these bigger markets? Like, is it pretty open, or are there local incumbents you're going up against? And then, secondly, on the Tinder alt login and web app, are there any markets where you've kind of rolled that out on a test basis that give you any indication of how much low-hanging fruit there might be, or is that going to kind of roll out, just happen all at once across geos? How should we think about that rollout and any tests you may have run?
Sure. I think, in markets like, let's take India, there is some competition, but it's effectively an unpenetrated market. And there you're fighting not so much competition, but culture, right? So what stands between Tinder and sort of great India penetration isn't three competitors. It's getting the Indian culture comfortable with a dating app and how it works and everything else. And Turkey is similar to that. Brazil is a country with a bigger history of those, but nothing dominates the way that Tinder does. I would say that, you know, we've had a hard paywall business in Brazil for a long time. Tinder sort of cuts through that. It appeals to a different group. I think as regards to the classic Tinder demo, I don't think competition is really the issue in these places. It's more just cultural advancement.
Have we been testing the
all? Oh, yeah, we haven't tested yet. We obviously, you know, by analogy, we made some assumptions about the kind of impacts these products could have as we set off to build them. They're pretty intensive projects. I mean, they are, Most things we do on Tinder aren't multi-month large team projects. These are because they're so fundamental. I think when they're ready, we will launch them in certain markets in test, not so much to see their impact because at that point we're fully baked, but to make sure they work and to fine-tune and all that sort of thing. So I think that's all going to start happening in Q2. We expect both to start testing and to roll out completely these products within the span of Q2.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Eric Sheridan of UBS. Your line is now open.
Thanks for taking the question. Maybe two if I can. One, on Tinder, as we continue to see strong subscriber growth and obviously the monetization comes through, what are you seeing in terms of engagement with the platform as you layer monetization on top of it? So if we were to look at an older cohort of Tinder users, any color you can give us about either improvements or flat in terms of the sort of engagement trends broadly and sort of the older cohorts at Tinder would be question number one. And question two, I don't know if we touched upon it earlier in the call, but on the affinity disclosure with respect to lower subs and lower marketing spend as you sort of sort through that business, is there any way to quantify the impact either on the sub basis or on the dollar marketing basis for Q4? Thanks so much.
Sure. On the engagement, well, a number of ways to look at your question. You know, Tinder Plus users, the subscribers tend to be the most engaged customers, obviously, so they're on the product the longest, et cetera. That's good for the product. Some of the features actually enable greater engagement than the non-Tinder Plus has. On an aggregate basis, you know, DAU to MAU has been pretty constant for years. I think probably from the first 6 or 9 months on, there was a decline, meaning that early group was incredibly engaged. But for the last 2.5, 3 years, DAO MAU has been generally pretty consistent. Certainly within geographies, it's been very consistent. In terms of the affinity, Gary, if you understood exactly how to answer,
yeah,
why don't you?
I think on affinity, you know, we're talking about reducing marketing spend and aggregate dollars, you know, into the double digits, right?
Of millions, yeah.
Millions,
I mean,
you know, north of $10 million. And so, you know, that's real, you know, bottom line impact to us.
Yeah, it's also takes down the PMC number, right? So, but look, we're hopeful that we can reallocate some of that spend in a positive way over the course of the year. So look, in this business, I know it's frustrating, but a lot moves throughout the year. You're making marketing. You don't set a marketing plan on day one and then execute it. You're buying literally every day. You're buying TV every week. You're buying Facebook and mobile platforms every week. You know, we set a range. We're pretty confident we'll end up in that range. Within that range, the composition will change, you know, 15 times, and we'll update you every quarter. But that's our current sort of outlook on it as we build it for the year.
Thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Dan Solomon of BMO Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys. Good morning. One for each of you. Greg, as you look out, I know it's very early in the marketing spending that you're investing in the rest of the world for Tinder just yet, and I'd assume you know, usage, PMC growth, those are or the sort of early thing is thinking of users and growing the number of people using it. But when you look at sort of early monetization, are there any sort of early insights to take? One assumes that, you know, sort of emerging markets typically monetize at lower rates than Western markets, but just interested if you're seeing any early dynamics there on monetization. And then for Gary, could you just get a little deeper into the CapEx and the reduction there and how you look out at it on a bit more of a run rate basis? Thanks.
Yeah, on the sort of rest of world marketing stuff, I think, you know, we're not trying to buy registrations or users. We're trying to sort of move the baseline, right? We're trying to create viral coefficients that you know, you always have a baseline and you have sort of the direct impact of marketing. We're trying to move the baseline, which is then when you stop marketing, you've actually moved the entire sort of, you've widened the top of the funnel permanently. It takes a little while to evaluate whether or not you've successfully done that or not. It doesn't really impact monetization. I mean, clearly, to the extent you create a more dynamic community over time, you have a better user experience, which should lead more people to monetize. But right now, we're very focused on simply expanding that top of the funnel on a baseline basis. I think, you know, ROW is obviously not monolithic. So India, Brazil, Turkey, they're all different. I think that it's safe to say that ROW monetizes meaningfully lower than than Europe and the United States. At the same time, it's also, on a user basis, a huge portion of our business, and in aggregate revenue, the aggregate revenue from that piece is not at all insignificant. It's, you know, it's less than half, but it's you know, more than 20%. You know, it's a meaningful number, and hopefully growing. So we're going to be patient on this. We want to see that rise in the top of the funnel. We're not really looking at the monetization piece as a measure of whether or not this marketing is successful at this point in time.
Sure. On the CapEx question, Dan, you know, we had outsized CapEx in 2016 as Tinder expanded its office facilities pretty significantly. We did a headquarters move of our Dallas office, and then we also had a big expense moving a data center from Virginia to Texas, which was a one-time event. So it was inflated in 16. I think you should look at 17 and what we're forecasting for 17 as more appropriate on a run rate basis.
Great, that's very helpful. Thank you to both.
One more
question.
And our last question will come from Victor Anthony of Aegis Capital. Your line is now open.
Thanks. Maybe two questions. In the past, you've talked about resubscription conversion as well as older cohort conversion as an opportunity. So maybe you could talk to that and what your expectations are for 2017. And on capital allocation, you call it M&A as you have in the past. So maybe you could talk to, you know, what's missing from the portfolio. Maybe you could go outside of just your core data and platform. I'm not sure. Thanks.
Okay. On it's a great question on the older cohort conversion. As you heard me answer earlier, and you can get really deep on this stuff, I talked about FTS, or first-time subs, really turning in Match and OkCupid, and that's a leading indicator. That is driven, you know, by, A, the number of regs coming in and your early conversion, which is the metric that we've been focused on. I think we are starting to see improvements, certainly in resub. We're starting to see some leveling off in the older cohort. So all that is turning positively, and we expect that to contribute to this growth or this return to growth over the course of 17. So, yes, it is significant. It has significant impact, and we're seeing improvements there. In terms of the M&A, I think there's always geography, right? There are geographies where there are interesting things that we could buy. There are always new products. I mean, you know, something becomes strategic by virtue of being a good product that has an interesting twist that appeals to people. And we see something, we say, we could take this and we could do more with it than they can. So that's the kind of thing that pops up. You talk about going outside of dating. I think it is possible to go outside of dating. I think that it will be much closer to dating, whatever we would do, than Prince and Review was. I mean, you would have to really leverage, you know, it would either be a matching app or a people discovery app, maybe for something other than dating, some sort of social engagement. You know, it will be pretty close to what we're doing, I think, at least in the near term. And obviously, if something like that happens, we'll tell you all about it. But right now, as always, we're opportunistic in M&A. We don't really forecast what we'll do. And, you know, but it's been a, you know, this has probably been our longest stretch without an acquisition in 7 years. Obviously, we're pretty focused on being a newly public company and making sure that we hit our agenda. I think looking back, you know, Gary and I were talking about the roadshow now 13, 14 months ago. And overall, I think, like, we pretty much did what we said we were going to do. Again, there were a couple things that were a little better, a couple things that were a little worse. But overall, I think we're pretty much on track. We feel good about that. Now we're pretty much focused on the New England Patriots revenge tour. We're off to Houston. Tom Brady's getting number 5. Go Patriots. And we will see you guys and talk to you guys next quarter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes today's program. You may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.